321-1200.
Broadcasting live from the KSHP studios in the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada.
It's time to get on the right side of sports betting. It's time for the Odds Couple.
Welcome to the Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is Scott Pritchard. I'm a professional sports bettor handicapper featured on VegasInsider.com. We have about 1 million views per day. I'm also featured on my site, PritchardsPicks.com. I get about 7, maybe 8 views a day. And then Tim Donaghy, he has a site, the former NBA official, refpicks.com. Check me out there as well. We're live and worldwide every day, Monday through Friday, right here on KSHP, also Vegas Video Network. I'm joined, as always, by Brett Grant, the GM here at KSHP. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. A terrific Tuesday. Are you sure you only get 7? I thought maybe there was at least 1 0 after the 7.
You know what it is? I'm working on it.
Or was the decimal point before the 7?
I'm working on it. Okay. It'll take some time. These things just don't happen overnight.
I understand. It does take a lot of money. Got to push that website.
Let's get started with what say you. Yesterday we were talking about the zigzag theory. For those viewers and listeners out there, I have to say that yesterday we touched on this a little bit, the fact that in the NBA playoffs you basically have the top 8 teams in the East, the top 8 teams in the West. So for all intent and purpose, you have good teams. If you lose game one, oftentimes as a professional athlete, professional team, you will come back strong, having made some adjustments, and it's called the zigzag theory. So the fact that the Clippers in game one dominated the Memphis Grizzlies, you would expect zag, meaning the Grizzlies would come back a little bit stronger. Now the sports books oftentimes will shade it that way. They are aware of the zigzag theory, and yesterday it went 2-0. The Bulls lost game one, and I'm not saying that teams will win straight up when this happens, but more times than not, they will certainly put up a more valiant effort and they will cover the number. Yesterday, 2-0, the one team, the Bulls, won the game straight up getting points, and of course the other team, the Grizzlies, lost by 2 at the buzzer, compliments of CP3. What say you?
The Grizzlies probably should have won the game also with their nice comeback yesterday, but we'll talk more about that later on in the show. We thought both teams, we talked about it yesterday, would play very well. We thought both those teams were anchored with their defenses. They didn't play well defensively in game one, either one, the Bulls or the Grizzlies. Both came out with very good defensive efforts in game two, and they both got the money, as you talked about. Bulls win straight up by 8 points as, what, a 5-6 point underdog, and then the Grizzlies lose by 2 points also as a basically a 5.5-6 point underdog, depending on when you bought the game yesterday. And the Bulls game, we talked about from a defensive standpoint, very, very good for them. And that game stayed under the total, where the other game, I believe, snuck over the total, but still a much better defensive effort by the Grizzlies.
Well, let's talk about the Bulls game first. The fact that this is a team, again, I love their coach. They play great defense, the Chicago Bulls. We talked yesterday about the Nets. You just don't know what you're going to get. They have talent led by Deron Williams. I'm not a big fan because, again, as a professional gambler, professional sports bettor, I like predictability. And I just don't know what I'm going to get with the New Jersey Nets. I do know that 9 times out of 10, I'm going to get energy and effort from the Bulls. I love their coach. I love the makeup of this team. Noah has been hurt. Has a heart of gold, one of my favorite players in the, I would say two players in the league, my favorite players, and it's all because of heart, desire, passion. It has to do with Tony Allen of the Memphis Grizzlies, who brings it each and every game, and Noah from Chicago. Not 100%, Brett, but he brought the goods last night, and I bring this up because Derrick Rose, the face of the franchise, sitting on the sidelines watching the game, Noah mans up, gets it done.
Well, he does look good in his suit. Derrick Rose does.
He does. He's a sharp-dressed man.
He is. But, you know, I don't necessarily mind him not coming back for this series because he hasn't been there all year. So if I'm the coach and I'm Tom Thibodeau, and I'm saying, look, obviously Derrick Rose is going to help us, but in the short term, he might actually hurt our continuity and what we've been doing all season long. So why do I want to bring back a guy for a short series in a playoff situation and potentially assume we're going to be better in 4 or 7 games than we would be without him? Now, if he came back in January and you had the acclimation of 20, 30 games to get him back into a rotation and get him comfortable, no question, I'd bring him back in. I'm actually thinking, if I'm the coach, I like the fact that he didn't force himself back into it because I think it hurts his rotation and what he's done all year. For Joakim Noah, no question, 11 points last night, 10 rebounds. He was terrific. Luol Deng was very good. Carlos Boozer brings it every night defensively, offensively. With, you know, they had three guys last night with double-digit rebounds to the Chicago Bulls. You don't lose many games when you've got three guys hitting the glass as well as they did. And you talk about Deron Williams and what they did with the Brooklyn Nets. He was 1-for-9 last night, had only 8 points. And the Nets came out of the locker room, only scored 11 points in the third quarter at home. Part of it was the fact they only shot 35%, but you really got to praise the Bulls' defensive effort last night, especially on the road.
Great team win, big win. Now we go to Chicago for games 3 and 4. D-Will, you mentioned 1-for-9, 1-for-10 shooting. It's like, wow, this guy on his home court, playoff time, it's time to man up. He just didn't get it done.
No, not at all. And now you go back to Chicago where the raucous crowd at the United Center, where the Bulls are very good at home, play very well at home, and it's a Nets team that has not been a very good road team this year.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on Vegas Video Network and KSHP AM 1400 Radio. We are fielding live chat questions. Simply go to Vegas Video Network, The Odds Couple. We also have the studio lines open at 702-221-7283. You want to talk sports betting, dial us in, 702-221-7283. Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, alongside Brett Grant. We're talking sports betting. Let's talk about that Clipper game last night. I mean, we broadcast the game live right here on AM 1400 Radio. Friendly reminder, we broadcast the Clippers, we broadcast the Dodgers, the Dallas Cowboys football, and BYU football as well. The Clippers up 12, fourth quarter, Memphis Grizzlies. I'm telling you, I love the heart and the makeup of this team. I've busted this team in the past as far as saying they're a bit of a fraud because they have no bench. And I think at one time they announced in the fourth quarter their bench had been outscored 28-6. But they're starting five as good as anyone in the league. And these guys are getting tired, but they just keep bringing it. A tremendous comeback. Down 12 in the fourth quarter to come back, tie it late before ultimately losing. Compliments of CP, 93-91.
Well, they didn't get a lot of points off their bench, but the 11 points they did get, and 9 of them from Darrell Arthur, were huge. In the game, and as Zach Randolph was in foul problems late, had to sit late, and I know we'll talk more about that a little bit later on as well, but Arthur picked up the slack. He was 4 of 5 off the bench, but Mike Conley and Tony Allen, they just were terrific last night, 44 points for Memphis, and we're talking about them as if they won the game, and and they probably should have won the game if you look at the way the game finished last night. But you know, Blake Griffin was much more assertive last night, 21 points for him, Chris Paul 24, so their two big guys delivered, Jamal Crawford 15 off the bench, but they got lackadaisical, I think, in that stretch, up 12, thinking the game was over, and the Grizzlies just kept chipping away. And a couple of missed free throws, a bad possession, a turnover. Next thing you know, it's a three-point game, it's a two-point game. Then it's a tie game, and you're thinking, wow, the Tony Allen dunk that tied the game. I think it was 80, at 89 then they came back, or 88 or 89, they tied the game. I think it was 89. And they got the free throw to tie the game. And next thing you know, the Clippers, I think they got a little nervous going through. And I think the Grizzlies let them off the hook. And my Are You Kidding Me will address how the Grizzlies let them off the hook.
Interesting, though, too. I mean, once they converted the three-point play, I believe it was Arthur, to make it 89-89, CP3 came down, hit about a 14-foot shot, right. Money shot. I mean, because, hey, now it's a photo. It's random. Anything can happen. And then of course, it was tied late 91-91 before CP3, again, just made a tremendous, tremendous shot. But I look at this Memphis team, again, they're starting five as good as any team in basketball. They're thin on the bench, but that was a big, big win. The Clippers are hot. They've won 9 straight games, 2 in the playoffs, 7 consecutive games to wrap up the regular season. So they're playing well at the right time.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but was it not the Clippers that were in Memphis in the playoffs a year or so ago?
Yes.
Down 24 and came back and won that game. So when they're down something late in the fourth quarter and rallied to win a monster
It was
comeback.
That series, but I'm trying to think which team did what.
I thought it was the Clippers who rallied
it might have been.
Beat Memphis.
Yeah. The Clippers ultimately won that series, and they were a dog. They won Game 7 last year, whereas I liked Memphis last year. I like the Clippers this year, but the Clippers upset them last year and upset me.
Does the Memphis Grizzlies bounce back in Game 3, realizing that obviously their backs are against the wall, they have to win? The Clippers have been a team at times that has played well on the road, but overall not a great road team.
That's the thing. I mean, they've had more road wins this year, Brett, than ever before, but they're predominantly a real good home team. They don't rebound particularly well. Surprising part, first two games in this series, they've out-rebounded the Grizzlies, which is a strength for Memphis. They play tenacious defense, the Grizzlies. They're a very dominant home team as well. I would expect that they would bounce back. The concern has been Zach Randolph. Foul trouble in game one, game two, five fouls in each game.
Well, I mean, they're very physical, Randolph and Griffin, together against each other. And I think Randolph got the better of Griffin in game one because Griffin was really held down quite a bit. And then Griffin came back, was 9 of 18. But I think he was more assertive. And I think it's going to be that kind of series. And I thought the referees really kind of let those two guys play most of the night, even though, I mean, they probably could have called 15 fouls in each guy the way they were banging going through against each other. But they did get him for the five, and with what, he got his fifth foul with about 4.5 minutes left to go in the game, and we never saw him again, which is interesting. I know you'll talk about that later on, but you really have to look at, especially with the way their bench was. And I think part of what Lionel Hollins, the coach of the Grizzlies, was doing was once Randolph went to the bench, Arthur played and took his spot and played very well, and maybe he didn't want to upset that momentum that his team had going. They made the comeback with Darrell Arthur on the floor and not with Zach Randolph on the floor.
Which, again, I just, it's so illogical. Why would you have your best player on the bench? This is a must-win game for the Grizzlies. Now they have to win 4 of 5 games against a very good Clipper team. I just don't understand it, and you're right. I will address that during the Are You Kidding Me segment. I mean, your best player, he's on the bench for the last 4.5 minutes of the game. I'm thinking, wow, did I miscalculate something? Did he have 6 fouls and not 5? 4.5 minutes to go, it's a 4-to-6-point game. And as far as Griffin and Zach Randolph going at it, knock down, drag out, I love it. It's very intense.
I did too.
Very physical. Both of these players are great. The problem I do have, it's so unlike me to call out an official, an authoritative figure, but I'm calling him out. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on. What? Why? Why would you call a double foul? No one is watching the game. 20,000 fans at home. You play 82 regular season games, and you're going to call a double foul? Why? How about playthrough? How about no call? Right. Or if you're going to make a call, call a foul on one or the other. But a double foul serves no purpose, and it ultimately took Zach Randolph out of the game.
That's a good point. And I think a lot of times as managers or players, the one thing about the referees, you don't want them – you want them to be kind of innocuous off to the side where obviously they call the things that must be called, but you don't want them to be the guys that decide the outcome of a game. And even though that call was early in the fourth quarter, it really did change the strategy of what the Grizzlies had to do. And Lionel Hollins apparently couldn't manage around that because he did. He got stuck in a box going, my guy's got 5 fouls. I have to sit him. And he apparently Randolph never raised his hand and said, coach, I'm still eligible to play. Put me back in the game, coach. I'm ready to play today. At some point, now let me ask you a question. If you're Kobe Bryant, if you're LeBron James, if you're Carmelo Anthony, if you're the number one player on your team, and I'm not saying Zach Randolph is one of those players, but he's clearly the best player on the Grizzlies, would one of those guys have not stepped up saying, hey, why am I not in the game?
Especially knowing that the inmates are running the asylum.
Right.
Knowing that the players are running the league and the coaches are secondary.
Right.
So, I mean, I was a little surprised because Zach doesn't have any problem expressing himself to the officials during the course of the game. He's right up there with the league average, or he's tops, close to being tops in the league as far as technicals for the year. But, yeah, he was pretty mild and meek on the sidelines there. He seemed, well, if body language is any indication. But I have a lot of faith and trust in Lionel Hollins, but I'm telling you, shocked, dismayed. 4.5 minutes to go in the game, 5 fouls. I mean, it's one thing if it's late in the third quarter, you have to, you know, buy some time. What are you saving this guy for? And then the fact that he never put him back in is Arthur is a decent, adequate backup.
Right.
But there's only one Zach Randolph. This was a huge, huge game. And, yeah, now he might be able to justify it today by saying, well, you know, we made our run with Zach on the bench. It's like, yeah, well, that's great. Congratulations. You still lost the game. You probably would have won the game had Zach been in the game.
Potentially. I think strategy-wise, he could have won the game a different way than the way the game finished as well. So I think Lionel's going to be taken to task a little bit. The former coach, by the way, of the now-defunct Las Vegas Bandits back in the day. I forget what the league that was from. Also now-defunct as well.
I remember 1977. I was in seventh grade for the first time or the second time?
I might have been the third.
1977, the Philadelphia 76ers. I remember taking my buddy upperclassman Ivan Yeris for $25. He was feeling pretty good about life because the Sixers were up 2-0, but I had Lionel Hollins and Bill Walton, and the Trailblazers went on to win 4 consecutive games. But I was a big Lionel Hollins fan because, again, $25.
Reese Lucas.
A lot of money back then. Yeah. A lot of money today.
There you go.
But, yeah, so I
ticket,
mean,
by
I
the
like,
way, upper deck today is a couple $100, right?
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
Actually, but a beer is $25, I think.
As you if they're having a sale.
Yeah.
If they're having a sale. So, I mean, I respect Lionel Hollins, just very disappointed in how he managed. Maybe he overmanaged, micromanaged the game late. I don't know. But Marc Gasol, their stud center, defensive player of the year. Congratulations to Mark.
I tell you what, I like his offensive game too. I mean, his brother gets all the pub in Los Angeles because of where he plays. That's Los Angeles versus Memphis, of course. And unless Marc Gasol had the Elvis sideburns, he was not going to get noticed, obviously, in Memphis going through. Although he does drive a Cadillac convertible, I think, to every game, just in case. But he was terrific. Hit a big shot, obviously, late that tied the game. And he had a couple of key plays where, when they were making their run back on the defensive end, where he didn't commit fouls, was able to get in the way, give space to the defender, and force bad shots away from the offensive guys, thinking they were going to draw contact and draw a foul, where Gasol handled himself very well and didn't commit a foul for the Grizzlies. And, you know, the more I think about that game and look at the way the game finished, and you can say, well, hey, the Clippers were up 12. They blew the lead. The Grizzlies should have won the game last night.
They came on. They really, I mean, Tony Allen many times, the defensive stalwart for the Grizzlies, has said, listen, offense will take care of itself. He said this during the course of the regular season. He said, we need to get stops. And this team is predicated on playing tremendous team defense. It's just an observation on my part. We're giving credit where credit's due in regards to Marc Gasol, defensive player of the year for the Grizzlies. Just my opinion. How can a guy be so tough defensively, but as a post player, as your starting center, I see him as soft. He's a very good outside shooter, 15, 20-foot jumpers. He nails them. It's kind of a set shot, but inside, not a real factor. This guy is great defensively, and he has a very good set shot to take the opposing team's big man out to confront him. But as far as in the post, unlike Powell, his brother, Powell was the man in the post.
Well, I think Mark's not nearly as quick as his brother is, and he doesn't have quite the same moves. There are different kinds of players where, obviously, as you mentioned, Mark can step out and shoot that 18 to 20-foot jump shot. I don't think Powell can do that. And boy, Paul's terrific from down low with the moves. And back to the Darrell Arthur, Zach Randolph thing real quick. I'm looking at the box score, and you look at the plus minus points when each guy was on the floor. And it's a part of the box score that matters in other sports. We don't really talk about it in basketball very much with whether or not the team's net points, what they were, plus or minus when you were on the floor. Now, if Scott, you were on the floor, we'd know it'd be minus
100?
Infinity and beyond.
Well, that's a little strong.
But Darrell Arthur last night was minus 11 when he was on the floor. In fact, all of the Grizzlies bench players were minus when they were on the floor. And ironically, on the other side, all of the Clippers starters were minus when they were on the floor. So it was clearly our bench was better than your bench, and Memphis' starters were better than the Clippers' starters, but it was the Clipper bench that was the difference in the game last night. When you look at that, they dominated the other team's bench.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I've been saying for years, it's not who you start in the NBA, it's who do you have coming off the bench. Now, I realize in the postseason, NBA playoffs, you tighten the rotation. Instead of using 10 to 12 guys, you might use 7 or 8. But boy, the Grizzlies basically have 7 players. I mean, Arthur coming off the bench, Bayless coming off the bench. They're starting 5, I love. But the fact is, maybe fatigue came into play, you would think, but not really, because they overcame a 12-point deficit in the fourth quarter. The Clippers' bench has been solid throughout, led by Jamal Crawford. I'm not a big Lamar Odom fan, but, I mean, he's long, he's athletic, he seems to get it done.
Well, I mean, if you look at the box score again last night, Memphis's bench really only gave them about 40 minutes off the bench last night, whereas the Clippers' bench, Jamal Crawford played 34 minutes himself. Matt Barnes played another 20 minutes. Lamar Odom played 18 minutes. Bledsoe, 14. Ronnie Tarif, 13. Whereas you only had two guys, Darrell Arthur and Quincy Pondexter, who played double-digit minutes last night off the bench. So it's a huge difference, and fatigue's a huge factor when Gasol and Conley and Allen and Prince are playing 38-plus minutes out of a 48-minute game. You do get a little tired, and Randolph, in foul problems, only played 31 last night. But if you compare starter minutes versus starter minutes, clearly the Clippers are relying on their bench, and the Grizzlies can't do that.
Bledsoe looked good off the bench. Crawford looked good off the bench. Ronnie Tarif, I don't understand. I mean, this guy, how is it? I don't understand why he's even in the league. But last night, he's a big, wide body. He kind of reminds me of Reggie Evans of the Nets. He's kind of a thug mentality, and he's very physical, but lacks skills, lacks game. But he did a good job against Gasol. I thought it was a good move by the coach for the Clippers to have him man up against Gasol, because Tarif has not been getting any minutes late in the season for the Clippers, but he did a good job with physicality, defense, right, against Gasol.
And he used his four fouls, and that's where I think Vinny Del Negro made a nice call with going, you know what, we got to keep him away from the glass, keep him down low and away, and you've got six fouls to use. Let's use some of them. I've got a deep bench, and if you lose Ronnie Tarif to foul problems, it's not really a big loss. He doesn't help you offensively, but he's a, like you mentioned, he's a clogger who can get some rebounds. He did block a shot. He turned the ball over one time, but he used four of his fouls, and that's important sometimes to do that.
Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, alongside the GM from KSHP, AM 1400 Radio, Brett Grant. We're live and worldwide, Vegas Video Network, live chat questions. Keep them coming. We might even put them on the air one day. Studio line is open, 702-221-7283. That's 702-221-7283. Revis, star defensive player for the Jets, now a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, held a press conference yesterday and said, I'm with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we are about to make some noise. What say you, Brett?
Is that the big clud and thud when they fall to third place or fourth place in the NFC South? I think the Buccaneers are a good team that is in a division that I think will be very difficult for them to win, with the Atlanta Falcons, with the New Orleans Saints, if they're healthy, with the improvement of the Carolina Panthers. I think Tampa is at best a 9-win team upcoming. I'm not sold on Josh Freeman, and I'm not sold on them offensively. And I'm not sold on Darrelle Revis being an island all by himself, unless that is a leopard island, because right now he wasn't very good last year. And, the NFL draft coming up in a couple of days. Is Revis as good as he was a couple of years ago? Is he a guy that you think is a shutdown corner? Can he go in and take on whether it's Roddy White in New Orleans, or shut down Marcus Colston in New Orleans? Can he shut those guys down? I don't know. Those are some pretty good offensive teams.
Interesting. It probably won't surprise our listeners and viewers on Vegas Video Network, KSHP Radio. Brett and I, we go live. We don't really prepare and talk beforehand. And if you listen to the show or watch it, you can see that. But in this case, this is a perfect example where you're talking about Tampa Bay Buccaneers, pretty decent team. But for him to say, we're going to make some real noise, I'm telling you, I don't get that, because they're the third best, maybe the fourth best team in that division, because Carolina
Panthers.
There's only four. Right, exactly.
So that would make them the strongest team in the conference. They're holding everybody else up, right?
Now, 2 years ago, exactly. Yeah, if you look at the standings upside down, they might make some noise.
Right.
But 2 years ago, they had a very good year. Last year, not so much. But again, you're talking about the New Orleans Saints. They're locked and loaded. They will be ready to go this year. The Atlanta Falcons have improved their team. They got rid of the dead weight Michael Turner, the running back, and they picked up Steven Jackson, the stud running back from the St. Louis Rams, who is an animal, Las Vegas native as well. And then you look at the Carolina Panthers, led by Cam Newton. So I think Revis certainly will help. But to solidify that defense, which had some real issues last year, the thing I like about Tampa Bay, they have a very good running game, but that has nothing to do with what Revis is doing defensively.
Well, who's Revis going to cover when they play the Atlanta Falcons? Julio Jones,
Roddy
or Roddy White?
Right, probably.
And so then Julio Jones gets three touchdowns.
Exactly. And of course you have Gonzalez coming out of the backfield.
Right.
I mean, that team, the rich just got richer in terms of offense for the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, they're a big play. They came one play away from going to the Super Bowl a year ago.
Right.
And yet Matt Ryan, 6 years now in the league, he's a star player. Stud, I mean, a great running back in Steven Jackson,
right.
A real upgrade from Michael Turner. So many weapons, and they
and
spread the field.
And a young player in Jacquizz Rodgers, who stepped in last year and
exactly.
A nice change of pace back for them as well.
Secondary player, that's a very good running back as well. So Revis, as good as he is, he can't guard everyone, in right. spite of what he might say.
He might. Well, it will be interesting when, as I think that division, I think the NFC West is also going to be much improved in a very good. I mean, you have Seattle, San Francisco. I think the Rams will be better. Cardinals probably not as good. But you've got some very tough competition ahead of you if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, you got four games against, you know, the Saints will bounce back and have a better year. Sean Payton will be back. Their team will be back in a cohesive unit where they were just completely dismantled last year from a coaching leadership standpoint. I would expect them to improve quite a bit. And Atlanta right now is the class of that division.
I look at the NFC compared to the AFC. I think the NFC is stacked per divisions. I mean, you have a two-team race in the NFC West, basically with Seattle and San Fran. But then, boy, the division we're talking about with the Falcons, Saints, Panthers, Buccaneers, NFC Central with the Bears, Minnesota, Green Bay Packers, Detroit Lions, and then the NFC East is always very competitive with the Giants, the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Redskins. Last year, the Redskins, the sportsbook said that the Redskins were the weakest team in that division. Well, the Redskins went from worst to first and won the division. That's football.
Well, yeah, it happens every year. I mean, and you had the injuries in Philadelphia, so the Eagles struggled last year. Now they have a new coach, and then we'll see what they're going to do in the draft. I think that you're right. There's no question in my mind that the depth of quality teams in the NFC is better than the depth of quality teams in the AFC. However, I think the AFC might have better teams at the very, very top. I mean, I think the Patriots, Baltimore, Denver this year, depending on what they do, will all be, if they, one of those teams get to the Super Bowl, will probably be the favorite over whoever makes it from the NFC in the Super Bowl. But I think the gauntlet is much tougher in the NFC. By the time the team gets to the Super Bowl, they had to go through a much tougher road, I think, to get there than a team from the AFC would have had to have done.
Well, again, the reason, one of the reasons the Patriots, in addition to having the best coach, Bill Belichick, and the best quarterback on the planet, and Tom Brady, the reason that they've had a lot of success advancing to the AFC Conference Championship games and or getting to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl, they're in a weak, weak division. The Bills, the right. Dolphins, the Jets have been now down now for the past couple, three years.
I think they still are. Those three teams are still weak.
So that means that you're probably going to go 6-0, 5-1, worst-case scenario in your division. I think going into the season, the sportsbooks probably will validate my point that you're looking at the Patriots and the Broncos. Notice I didn't say the Ravens. Right. I'm still in shock. I mean, professional sports bettors see things before they happen. I'm not proud, even though I'm wearing a purple Raven shirt today.
I forgot to make fun of you for that. And by the way, thanks for the memo. I didn't realize it was purple shirt day again. I mean, I still have this stuff over here. I'm good, you know. Although my sticky notes, I'm running low. I've only got a couple left.
I still can't believe. I'm surprised that the Baltimore Ravens won the Super Bowl, all because the Niners could not convert a first and goal from the 7, all because with 34 seconds to go, Mile High Stadium in Denver, the Broncos could not hold off Joe Flacco and the Ravens on a 72-yard touchdown pass play, all because Tom Brady turned the ball over uncharacteristically in the second half of the game at home. The Ravens, there's a good point. I'm getting to a point here because
let me know when that happens.
The pro football, check back in an hour. Pro football, it's really not making the big, big plays consistently. Right. More than anything else, it's not beating yourself. I don't want to have a defeatist attitude because I don't approach my life that way, but in handicapping pro football, Joe Flacco, good quarterback, not great. Won a Super Bowl, but so did Trent Dilfer and so did Mark Rippon. So that doesn't impress me. What does impress me, my friend, is that Joe Flacco did not fumble or throw an INT once they went to Denver, New England, and played the Niners in the Super Bowl.
You got to hit, and I've had this argument with people. Peyton Manning, everybody loves Peyton Manning, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Peyton Manning has been a top seed in the playoffs in much of his career, right? The Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning and then the Denver Broncos have walked into the playoffs almost every year as a number one or number two seed. Agree or no?
Absolutely.
Joe Flacco is 9-1 in his career in the playoffs on the road. 9 playoff wins on the road. That's the most in NFL history. So he's taken in teams that have been 4 seeds, 5 seeds, 6 teams, and gone into on the road and beaten Tom Brady twice, beaten Peyton Manning twice. In fact, the only quarterback that he does not have a winning record against in the playoffs is Ben Roethlisberger. So I think Joe Flacco is very underrated. I think he's a fantastic quarterback. He's done everything he's needed to do. He's guided that team. He's delivered big plays. He's not turned the ball over. And, yes, they might have relied on their defense, but he's gone in on the road and won football games. They should have gone to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. If not for the kicker missing a field goal in New England, they would have gone to the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. So I give Joe Flacco plenty of credit of being a very good quarterback who doesn't get the props he deserves when he has winning records against Brady and Manning. And Peyton Manning has a losing record in the playoffs. As a team that's playing at home most of their games in the postseason, he's got a losing record. So I think he's overrated.
You think that Flacco is underrated.
And I think Manning is overrated.
I will agree with the Manning assessment. We're talking about a guy who's 9-11 right. in the playoffs, okay? But the reason that Manning has been seeded one or two is because he's a very good regular season quarterback. Right. And the reason I respectfully disagree with your assessment on Flacco, I think he's overrated. And I'll tell you, there's a reason why the Ravens are a 4 seed or a 5 seed is because he doesn't get it done in the regular season.
I think the reason he's a 4 or 5 seed is because the Pittsburgh Steelers were a better team overall, and that's one of the reasons, whereas the Indianapolis Colts were in the worst division in football for a decade. There's no question about that. When you're playing Houston and Jacksonville, and who's the other team in their division? I can't remember off the top of my head.
The Colts, Jacksonville,
Tennessee.
Houston,
and Tennessee.
Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, that was a pretty weak division for most of those
years. Right, right.
Whereas the Steelers were the dominant team in their division. Cleveland and Cincinnati not very good, and Baltimore kept running up against the Steelers. Didn't win that division, and if you don't win that division, you are the number 4 seed. That simple.
I think the reason Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl with the Ravens, I believe in 2001 against the Giants, was because they didn't ask him to win the game. They asked him, just don't screw it up. Just don't lose it for us. And the same way with Mark Rippon. I was at that Super Bowl in 92, Minneapolis Metrodome, when the Redskins knocked off the Buffalo Bills. Mark Rippon, not very mobile, okay? He was sacked in the entire season 7 times. That's because he was blessed with a very good offensive line. I could stand back there in a tuxedo and not get sacked. So the quarterback, it all falls on his shoulders. I get that. He's the GOAT when they lose. He's the hero when they win. As far as Joe Flacco goes, good quarterback, not great. But hard to argue with success. They won the Super Bowl this year. But again, what's the quarterback's best friend? Good running game. Ray Rice is the man.
No question.
And Pierce is an adequate backup. So their defense, surprisingly enough, I mean, they were 24th to 27th in the league. They came on like a house on fire. They made the adjustments. Ray Lewis, overhyped, overrated, 17 years in the league, an antique. And the betting under 11.5 tackles for the Super Bowl was a lock,
right?
Even though I always say locks are for doors, but that was a lock. So, again, I mean, the Ravens won the Super Bowl. We respectfully will disagree on this assessment. You love Joe Flacco. I'm not sold.
Well, if you look at the Super Bowl again, and not to talk about Joe Flacco, and kind of like the basketball game last night, you really have to question the way the 49ers managed the final 3 or 4 plays of that particular game, because it was horrible.
Well, I would agree. And everything's magnified. Everything's under a microscope.
It's a Super Bowl.
I understand.
They don't call it the Mini Bowl.
Right.
It's a Super Bowl.
Well, and I'm a big Harbaugh fan, okay? I really respect him as a coach. But, gosh, if you don't get it done, you open yourself up
When you're gashing a team with the running attack and you get marched right down the field and then you don't run the ball and you throw some really questionable throws in the meantime into the flat – with no timeouts left, and you get your guy killed, and you know that Michael Crabtree is hurt, and then on fourth down, you try to throw it to him again, and he's already hurt. When you have Vernon Davis, who's a monster, potentially available for you in the end zone, that's one of the things about the NFL that drives me crazy. If I've got 3rd and 3, why am I throwing the ball 2 yards? Or I have 3rd and 10. Why am I throwing the ball 8 yards? I need 10. And if I've got 4th and goal, and I'm not throwing the ball into the end zone, and you can look at Jeff Fisher and the Tennessee Titans against the St. Louis Rams in the Super Bowl.
I was there. 1 yard short.
Why are you throwing that ball 1 yard short? That ball's got to go in the end zone. There's a perfect example of you have to throw the ball where it needs to be if it's caught or not. And I think last night's in the basketball game is the exact same example of a team not doing what they should have done to win a game.
Leftwich of the Pittsburgh Steelers backup quarterback. It was so annoying because his stats looked good. 9 of 11, 37 yards. Did not pick up 1 third down. It's 3rd and 8. He's throwing a 4-yard pass. Well, it looks good in the box score, but your team just lost or didn't cover a 13.5-point number against the hapless Kansas City Chiefs. So all numbers are not created equally. There's a reason why the guy's open 5 yards down the field.
Because they're giving it to you.
Of course. It's third and eight.
Right.
So
I agree.
The defense is going to let, and then they're going to tee off on the guy.
Right. No, there's no question. And it always drove me crazy going, well, that's one of the reasons why I love the Rams and their greatest show on turf. They never threw the ball for 5 yards. They were attacking and attacking and attacking down the field, down the field. And then when you're thinking, then they softened you up with that. Here comes Marshall Faulk and rushing through. I love that kind of, I mean, the dink and dunk thing drives me crazy.
I have to say, Mike Martz, the coach of the St. Louis Rams, when they picked up that UNI Panther product, Kurt Warner, it was a match made in heaven. And what I loved about Martz at the time, I'm telling you,
I think the Hy-Vee manager was still waiting for him to come back to work, wasn't he?
Used to bag groceries at Hy-Vee, and the next thing you know, he's leading the St. Louis Rams, all because Trent Green,
by the way, I used to drive Trent Green to high school.
Is that right?
But go on with your story.
Yeah, I mean, they won 4 games, and now their star quarterback, Trent Green, breaks a leg in preseason against the Chargers. They bring in this no-name Kurt Warner. But Mike Martz, the coach for the Rams, I love the guy, but I'm telling you, it's amazing. The guy lost his nerve. I loved him because he was fearless. He said, listen, I'm an original thinker. I'm going to do things my way. I'm going to pass on every single down. The greatest show on turf, as you say. But it was interesting. They were playing the Chargers 1 year in a regular season game, and the Chargers had the worst pass defense in all of football. And Martz
decided to run that game?
No, 21 straight to start the game, 21 straight plays passing, and they were up like 35-3,
right.
And he kept passing the ball. I loved it. It's like our strength is your weakness, and you'll see teams try to ball control it or get cute, not him. But eventually, by him being – he never gave reference to time or down, and I just loved it. He was the one coach who never – it didn't matter. If it was third and two, he could go for a bomb. Tough to defend. And he was the one coach when you're trying to run out the clock – not that they were involved in many close games a couple of years, but he would throw the ball and try to get the first down, unlike, say, John Fox of the Denver Broncos.
Right.
Everyone's getting on Manning for that playoff game this year, but had they just picked up a first down, my way of thinking is, hey, forget the prevent defense, forget putting the opposing team's offense on the field, pick up the first down, game's over, play
right.
to win.
No, I agree with you, but if you look at the Super Bowl when they lost, when the Patriots beat the Rams on the Adam Vinatieri field goal to win it, great job by Bill Belichick in daring Mike Martz to run the football, because he was giving them the run. He took away the pass, but Martz, so stubborn and obstinate in that particular game, refused to give the ball to the Hall of Fame guy named Marshall Faulk behind him, and lost the game because he wouldn't change. And he kept trying to throw and kept trying to throw. And the Patriots were daring the officials. We're going to jam Torrey Holt. We're going to jam Isaac Bruce. We're going to jam Azakim. We're not letting the receivers get off the line of scrimmage. We're going to hold them. We're going to pull them down. We're going to do everything possible. And the referees are not going to litter the field with laundry in a Super Bowl. It's just not going to happen. And Belichick's move paid off, and Martz never did turn around and say, hey, we got number 28 behind her. Give him the ball. And he never got out of his own way. And Belichick's gamble, obviously it helped with the guys shooting video up there and stealing the game plan away as well.
Oh, that didn't help. That didn't hurt. Spygate.
It didn't hurt the Patriots. But Belichick took a gamble and said, you know what, the referees are not going to throw laundry every play. So we are going to hold. We are going to pull them down. And if you watch that game tape and you watch the isolations on the receivers, the Patriots just absolutely manhandled the Rams receivers. And none of it was called for fouls the whole game. And Martz didn't know what to do.
He overreacted, though, because the following year he wasn't the same coach. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe that's because they were favored by double digits, 14 points, I believe, in that game against the Patriots, that the Patriots ended up winning by a field goal. But he lost his nerve. I loved him so much up until that actually happened, because he was absolutely fearless. And he would – it's kind of like in poker. You know, if you're a good poker player, if you have what you think is the best hand, raise. If you don't have a very good hand, raise. The reason is they can't read you.
Right.
And with Martz, he was fearless. He would like pass on every down, every single down. It was great. I mean, they had their strength with spreading the field and just picking teams apart. You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 radio, live and worldwide, KSHP Vegas Video Network. Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, alongside Brett Grant. We're going to get to Spin to Win. I've got the wheel right here.
That's wonderful. handwriting. Who
is that? I can't even see it. No, that would not be me, because if it was me, you would not be able to read it at all. We're looking at NBA basketball. The Golden State Warriors taking on the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are favored by 8 points. This is game two. The Nuggets won game one, 97-95. This is spin to win, where I'm going to spin it. I'm going to be forced to argue one team or the other. Brett automatically has to make an argument for the other side. The reason is you should be well-versed and understand that you should be able to make a valid point to betting either team. All right? Spin to win. The smart bettor bets with his head, never his heart. Warriors taking on the Nuggets. I've got the Warriors. All right. I'm taking a road team plus the points. Underdogs are oftentimes undervalued. I'm getting 8 points, and if the zigzag theory is true, then I'm making the right call. Golden State plus 8. I don't respect this team on the road, but I do respect the fact that I'm getting not 5, not 6, 8 points. It's a bit happy. The Nuggets are a good, solid team. They've only lost 3 home games the entire year, but this is the playoffs. This will be a relatively close contest. I expect the Warriors, a good team, questionable on the road, but a good team. They're going to rally around the fact that one of their star players, David Lee, is hurt. He's out. We saw it work for Louisville, and now it's going to work for the Warriors of Golden State.
I like the other side. If we're doing the zigzag, wouldn't now, since the Warriors covered in game one, we got to zag over to the other side and go with the Denver Nuggets, and now I've got a team that is also down there, one of their best players, David Lee, being out. That brings Carl Landry into the lineup. It weakens their bench. Denver at home in this spot with Lawson and Andre Iguodala doing their thing. They really shut down Seth Curry in the first game. It was 7 of 20 from the floor, and now Curry's going to have to take on a bigger load and probably more pressure on him to deliver for his team to be in the series. I like the fact that I got the Nuggets in a spot here where they could blow this game open, because without David Lee there, Golden State's not the same basketball team, especially on the road.
The odds makers are aware that David Lee is not playing, and the line reflects that. If David Lee was playing, the line certainly wouldn't be 8. So the line does reflect that. And getting back to your point on the zigzag theory, knowing that the Warriors covered, that's true. But let us not forget, the players don't know and care about covering point spreads. And if they do, I'd like to know about it, because I'll get on. I'll get on board.
Sometimes now, the referees know.
I've heard that. Exactly. I've heard that. Now, but if you look at the Warriors, they lost the game. So as a professional athlete and a professional team, they will make adjustments. So I expect a competitive game, not to say that Golden State will win the game, but I think plus 8 might help you. I'm only saying this because the wheel said I had to make an argument for the Warriors. I'm not playing the game.
There
but
you go.
It's your money. You do whatever you like.
I got you. I probably won't play it either.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. This is The Odds Couple on KSHP and Vegas Video Network.
Have you ever thought you should be on the radio? Or have you considered doing an online video show or podcast? If so, now is your only chance to do both at the same time. KSHP and the Vegas Video Network have teamed up to provide the only multi-camera broadcast quality video and live radio simulcast in Las Vegas. And instead of having your show played at some ungodly hour, the KSHP Vegas Video Network partnership is producing shows that play from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Imagine having your own radio show broadcasting to the entire Las Vegas Valley, and combine that with an online presence that is viewed in all 50 states and 150 countries, both live and on demand. This is a first and an outstanding opportunity to give voice to your business, your ideas, and your talent. If you'd like your own show on KSHP and the Vegas Video Network, contact us today at 221-1200. That's 221-1200.
Welcome back to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, Las Vegas, Nevada, live and worldwide on Vegas Video Network. This is The Odds Couple. Reach out to us. Email us at oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. That's oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. Also, we would love to hear your voice on our show. Simply go to our site through web-based voicemail. Right-hand side, red bar, click there. And then in the middle of the page, a green bar, hit start recording. We are fielding live chat questions, compliments of Vegas Video Network. Now, if you do miss us live, no worries. Reach out to us, YouTube, iTunes, Vegas Video Network, Roku, Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, alongside Brett Grant, GM of KSHP. You can catch us Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., live and worldwide. This is fun. What isn't fun is frustration when it comes to sports and sports betting. Are you kidding me?
My turn. We go back now to we both have the same subject we're going to talk about in Are You Kidding Me? And it's Lionel Hollins, the coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. And to me, when you are the road team, Scott, and there's 21 seconds to go in the game, and you are down 2 points, you hang on to the ball. You take the last shot. You don't give the offensive team a chance to win the game. I'm either going to win the game or I'm going to lose the game with my best player having the ball. I understand you scored and tied the game 91-91 with Gasol scoring, but you gave CP3 and the Los Angeles Clippers the chance to win the game at the buzzer. If I'm coaching that team, my strategy is we're either going to win the game at the buzzer with a three, we're going to tie it at the buzzer and go into overtime, or we're going to lose at the buzzer with my team with the ball and that chance to steal the game on the road. Not the best player on the floor in Chris Paul getting a chance to win the game. I think Lionel Hollins made a horrible strategic error in that regard. So, Lionel Hollins, are you kidding me?
Before we get to my are you kidding me, I want to address that because I respectfully disagree. If you're down two, you're on the road, 21 seconds to go, I think you go for the best open look that you get. You want to extend the game. The idea is if you miss, you can still extend the game and hope that they split the free throws and you have a shot for a game-tying three. So if you're behind, I think you work for the first open look that you get, whether it's a three or a high percentage shot with Gasol. So I think they did the right thing there. That's the one right thing I think that Lionel Hollins did, the coach of the Grizzlies, but obviously we see things differently.
Well, it's because you're wearing a purple shirt.
Maybe that's
I can't see anything.
Maybe that's
I just prefer on the road that the opportunity to steal was there for them to either hold for the final shot, or they did have a good look, and Gasol scored, and I can't complain about the fact that they tied the game. But they gave, 13 seconds to the Clippers to win the game, which I thought was way too much time, and I wouldn't do that because there's no question that Chris Paul is the best player on the floor. So Chris Paul doesn't have the ball. I don't want to give him the ball. The end result was you still lost the game. So for me it was, if I'm going to lose the game, I want to lose it with my guys taking the last shot, and worst case, forcing overtime if we win, and if we make, or maybe we win the game with an open look for a three-point shot.
Clippers favored by 6 in that game. I think if you talk to the Grizzlies before the game or if you talk to sports bettors, it's like, hey, you know what? If the Grizzlies are tied with 13 seconds to go and all they have to do with their tremendous half-court defense is hold the Clippers, they would take their chances. Let's give credit where credit is due. CP3 just made an outstanding shot. It was a great, great win for the LA Clippers. For my Are You Kidding Me segment, I'm going to go with Lionel Hollins.
Tuck in!
Are you kidding me? But for different reasons than my good buddy Brett Grant. 4:32 to go in the game. Your best player, Zach Randolph, just picked up foul number 5. Not number 6, but foul number 5. The game is on the line. He's your best player. He took him out. I'm thinking, what are you doing? You're taking him out. Are you saving him in case the game goes overtime? You're saving him, for maybe a 30-second, 60-second to catch his breath? No, he never went back into the game. Lionel Hollins, are you kidding me?
I don't have a problem with him taking him out with 4.5 minutes to go, but you certainly got to bring him back in the game with 2 minutes to go, 1 minute to go, 30 seconds to go, at the timeout at 13 seconds to go to play defense. They didn't bring him back in to play defense either. I agree with you. You got to bring him back at some point. I don't mind taking him out with 4 minutes to go, but with 2 or 3, and why he wasn't on the floor at the end of the game when Chris Paul is going to the basket is beyond me.
I'm going to take it to the next level and say, yes, no, you don't take him out, period. Why? The game's on the line. It's not like we're talking 10 minutes, 8 minutes, 7, 4.5 minutes to go. It's a 2-3 possession game. You need your best player in there. It's just over the top crazy to think that he never put him back in at all. But to take him out in that situation, you only take a guy out with 5 fouls if there's time and the game is not decided. I mean, right. If the game's already decided, but it hadn't been. It's a photo.
No,
I mean, they have a shot. It's 2-3 possessions, and he's out. So, Lionel Hollins, are you kidding me? We're going to keep it moving here. Odds Couple, Vegas Video Network, KSHP, AM 1400 Radio, Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com with Brett Grant. This is the part of the show where we put money into your pocket as we together put you on the right side.
The right side today, recapping yesterday, I gave you the under in the Bulls New Jersey, Brooklyn Nets game, I should say. I still got them across the river over there. But that game did go under the total, so we had a nice win for you there. Today I'm going to go to baseball. And this is not because I'm a Cardinal homer, but I am a Cardinal fan, so all disclosure fully out there for you. Cardinals and Nationals today. Adam Wainwright on the mound, 3-1 on the season with an ERA of 2.48. They'll take on Russ Detweiler today, who's been terrific, 1-0 with an ERA of 0.9 in this particular matchup. And to me, Scott, this is a game where the Cardinals, a small favorite with Adam Wainwright, they're in a good spot. It's a good matchup from the Cardinals' standpoint against the Nationals. They've won four of the last five meetings against the Nationals, and in those four Cardinal wins, they've held the Nats to only 6 runs in those four games. And the last time out, Adam Wainwright faced the Nationals, he was rocked. So I think from a Wainwright standpoint, he's got a little bit of revenge on his mind in that regard. And Detweiler, while being very good early in the year, he was a guy who was roughed up by the Cardinals early in the year. I think I expect a lower scoring game, but I like the Cardinals in this spot with a small favorite on the road against the Washington Nationals.
Had a great game yesterday with St. Louis taking on the Washington Nationals. Before we get to my right side, I was on a total. The Giants game under, looking good until the bottom of the 8th inning. Lost the game, but never mind that. Hey, Brett wins. That's all that really matters. He's the man here. He's the GM.
Me.
As long as he's winning, everyone's happy. So good job, Brett. I do have a game today. Baseball, American League A's on the road taking on the Boston Red Sox. We've talked before about this Oakland team. Man, they defy logic. I mean, in the past, they've been a tremendous pitching team, and yet it's a pitcher park in Oakland. This game is on the road in a hitter-friendly park, Fenway Park, Boston. But the fact is, the A's went over again yesterday. They're number one in all of baseball as far as overs. We've been singing that song all year, Red Rover, Red Rover. I love the over. The over-under for this game is 9. I'm going to buck that trend. I really see value in betting under 9, 9 being a key number in the American League. Cologne is going for Oakland, and a whip, walks, hits, innings per pitched, 1.059 is a bit happy. I think it reflects the fact that this team has been playing a lot of over contests. This timing is everything, and I feel under is where the value is. Oakland taking on Boston, the right side for me, under the 9. Ring up the ringer wherever it is and see the cashier.
I'm not sure where she is today. She took a walk. He's got legs. Oh, there it is, up here.
It's up there.
It's up there.
My arms are long, but not quite that long.
You're like a wide receiver in the NFL. Afraid to go over the middle? Alligator arms over here? Come on, what's the matter with you?
Exactly. I'm afraid about the contact, so I'll just leave it right there.
By the way, that game with the A's and Red Sox is an earlier start, 3:30 today. So if you want to make that play, it's a 3:30 start for you there.
We're having a lot of fun. The Odds Couple, Vegas Video Network. We're live and worldwide Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. KSHP AM 1400 Radio. Again, you can check me out. My site, PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com. Been around for a long time. College football this past year on the site. I love VegasInsider.com because they timestamped and they document the plays. Not many sites do that. Tim Donaghy, former NBA referee from 1994 to 2007, ran into some trouble, served 11 months in prison, but the fact is he's a former NBA official who knows the psyche of officials in the NBA and what players may or may not be thinking. So I'm on his site now, refpicks.com. So please continue to tune in. We love having you tune in for whether it be web-based voicemail, email. The live chat questions are always cool. For future reference, our phone number is 702-221-7283. For Brett Grant, my name is Scott Pritchard. Good luck and goodbye.